right, folks, we are back on the T-Talk podcast brought to you by Flagstick.com. Still in quarantine, as per usual. Could be a while, but I'm sitting in a Zoom here with my co-host, Scott McLeod. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. How are you, man?
I'm all right. Anything you've been doing to spend your time here and get into the golf scene? I mean, the spring's coming around here. I want to get into playing. I want to get into chipping. I ordered a mat off of Amazon. It's supposed to be here mid-May, which is great. 6 weeks
mat.
Yeah, so by then I won't even have grass in the backyard. So who knows what's going on. But you doing anything golf-related lately?
Just a little putting in the basement and stuff. I mean, the weather hasn't been that great to make some swings or anything outside. But I'm sort of recovering from a little shoulder injury anyways. That was my little... I think I talked about it on the podcast where the dog dragged me and had a little wipeout there. So yeah, my left shoulder's not so good. But anyways, no, just a little putting. And probably it's good for me. It gives me a little bit of rest. And I think that'll lead into a little topic later on of why maybe this pandemic will pay off for some other players.
That is true. We hinted about that last week that we had. Last week we did the top five players we're most worried about coming out of the pandemic, the quarantine. This week we're going to flip it, go in a positive route of the players that are going to benefit the most. We might have some carryover from last week. I'm not going to get too far into it, but a little hint there. I don't know about you. I've been itching to play golf and been dipping into the Tiger Woods games of the past. Ooh. Especially over the weekend, watched the Masters where Tiger won, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after, but had to hop on the old Tiger Woods 13 and play Augusta at least four rounds, and it scratched the itch for a little bit. How about you?
I delved into it for different reasons. I noticed someone post online talked about some of the NFL games that you could play and maybe how you could kill some of your time, because obviously there's, you know, no games of that going on, no baseball, no major sports. So I went digging through some of the older games for the sake of doing a post, and I happened to fall upon some stuff from like the late 80s, early 90s, like really archaic stuff. And you know, to the dismay of my daughter, who looked over my shoulder and laughed as she saw me playing some of these games, I ended up playing a bunch of 1991 Jack Nicklaus golf.
On what system?
There's actually simulators online. And basically, I looked online and I found a website called Arcade Spot, which has thousands of classic type games. You can play Space Invaders on there, you know, Galaga, you name it. And it's got, you know, different Tiger Woods versions, all sorts of different things. And I thought, you know what, how bad were some of these games? Mm-hmm. Let's go and look and see how bad they were. Because obviously we're looking at it from perspective now where, you know, people have some of the most creative games with tons of graphics and stuff. And you play it on your phone. It's in your hand. So we didn't have that luxury back then. You know, you had to play it on your desktop or whatever system that you had.
On your Atari.
Yeah, well, pretty
much. Commodore 64.
No, it was a little later than that, but just having a look at those and going back and going, you know what, I spent a lot of time playing that game. How bad was it? And frankly, it was pretty bad if you go back and play Jack Nicklaus from 1991.
Yeah, but so. You shot a 56. That was, oh, that you was saw pretty that. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what I think that's why I probably tired of playing them, because it was probably too easy. I think that one round. So that was the only full round that I played. I played a couple of holes and I did a screencast of that and I included it in the post. It's up on flagstick.com. So you can see sort of what the gameplay looks like, the graphics look like, the annoying music just repeats over and over again. The awkward sort of controls and things like that. But yeah, you know what? I hold out three shots in a row to make three eagles in a row on Muirfield Village, I guess it was. So I think that's why I probably got bored of it eventually. The fact that you could go back after almost 30 years and play this game and not know how to use the controls and all of a sudden, you know, you shoot 56. Well, that tells me right away, you know, the difficulty of it, the challenge of it probably disappeared pretty quickly. And that's probably why, you know, I stopped playing it in the first place.
That's fair. So after playing four rounds out at Augusta in Tiger Woods 13, they actually had the old old white course at the Greenbrier on.
Oh,
which was nice. The last time and probably the last time I will ever carry a bag on the PGA Tour. Somehow, you know, was playing, got going early, and ended up shooting 59 to match my boy Kevin Chappell's 59. Nice. When we were out there. So that was fun to relive that. Way easier on a video game, but it was a weird... Yeah. Very weird experience for me because that was the only course that I've ever obviously been able to play on a video game that I've played in real life. And it was a different experience, but those games, they still bring a lot of joy to me for sure. I could play Tiger Woods for hours. I mean,
for you, what was the first one that you sort of remember playing? And was it, you know, is it a Tiger Woods game? Was it, what version was it? And then, you know, what format were you playing it on?
Yeah, like Tiger Woods, I don't know, 06 or something like that on an Xbox or a PlayStation. I was a PlayStation guy growing up.
Yeah, okay.
But my buddy had an Xbox, and we actually had this summer in university. So we played all year he was in Hamilton, I was in Guelph. I'd bus on down, we'd play, you know, normal university kids just drink all day and play video games all night. and we'd play like four rounds, all four of us sitting there and, you know, make it a game. So we did that all year. Then the summer came and we got into the Wii Tiger Woods
game. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and, yeah. Were you doing it on the bat with the balance board? Were you making swings too, or were you just using the controller?
It was the controller to make swings. Okay. The balance board would have been fun. I don't think the version I had didn't have that in, but we used to do that all the time. We'd play, you know, on a rainy Saturday. I remember one round we went out to play a local course in the area, and we got there and we should have known that we probably weren't going to finish the round when we were in the clubhouse and we overheard on the radio that one of the golf carts has gone through the bridge. We somehow went out, played three holes, and between the third hole and this fourth hole out of this course called Rivendell, there's this giant hill. And our carts couldn't get up the hill. That's how wet it was. So we ended up getting a rain check, and we went back to one of my buddy's parents' place, and we literally played full four rounds of Augusta National on the Wii. I believe it was Augusta. I don't, maybe not, but it doesn't matter. Sure. On the Wii, full four rounds, and gave out a major championship for the winner and everything. And by the end, there was guys that could barely even stand to play. Like, it takes a while on the Wii when everyone's standing up to actually swing it. But yeah, it was, those are my fondest memories of playing those video games. Do you remember back in your, youth stage, day and age where I put those two words together there, playing games like that with all your buddies?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I go back a little bit later than you, or a little earlier on. So some of the games were pretty primitive early on. I think by the time they got to like Lynx Golf in like 1992, Lynx LS in 1996, I can remember at that point I was a retailer, and I can remember we had the game set up in the shop in our store, and we eventually had a golden tee in our store. So people could come in and, you know, you could play it.
Throw a couple loonies in there.
Yeah. We weren't charging people or whatever. They could come into the store and play it, and it wasn't there for that long or whatever. But I can remember people coming in just to play LS 96 and just, you know, they also, I think at that point, got to the point where you could, you know, design your own golf courses and things like that. And I guess I don't remember sort of the same things you did as far as maybe gaming sessions for like an all day or something like that, but certainly they impacted me because, like you said, you get the itch to play and it just takes care of it. I mean, you can't play golf at night, so, you know, you're interested in playing, you want to see how you're going to do. It doesn't simulate actual golf, but, you know, it's something golf related. So I think a lot of people have those ties, and I think the Tiger Woods franchise really became something really strong when EA was doing that. You know, I think the first one, Tiger Woods 99, came out in 1998, and I looked online. There's actually a Wikipedia page with all sorts of the different history of video games. It's probably really interesting to go through and pick out all the versions that you possibly played over the years. And even the Jack Nicklaus Golf, I mean, they came out, I think 88 was the first one that came out. And by the time the mid 2005, 2006 came along, they had actually tried to come out with a version where you could do a lot of online gaming. They're going to have up to 1,000 players at once, and they could have a little bit of a tour. And it just wasn't really feasible at that point based on internet speeds and things like that. But it's been interesting to watch, and it's always fun to talk to people about, you know, their video game experiences and probably as we're talking about this right now, there's a lot of people probably playing a lot more golf video games than ever, you know, be it World Golf Tour or something like that.
Well, it's funny because I remember when we had Gligic on and I was talking to him about that, just the, you know, playing golf courses that he's playing out on the PGA Tour when he was playing it on Tiger Woods. And for me, you know, a lot of those golf courses, I feel like I know on the back of my hand just from playing, you know, on PlayStation, and especially Augusta, right? You don't see a lot of the front. I see some of it, most of it, you know, with the final pairings come the weekend, right? But in the back in the day, you never really saw much of it. So I, you know, I think I know Augusta better than any golf course, just the entire layout, where like Pebble Beach, like I've played it virtually, but I wouldn't know every single hole in order compared to Augusta just from playing it. But this kind of topic of video games kind of took us down a whole other memory lane as well. I don't know if you saw this on Golf WRX. They did a top five TaylorMade irons of all time. And I really enjoyed it. TaylorMade's made some great irons over the years. Just came out with one of their best, in my opinion, and we'll get to that in a moment. And we decided we're going to make our own list of the top five TaylorMade irons. We're kind of probably going to do this over the next little while with all the different brands.
For sure.
So why don't you go first? Give us your top five TaylorMade irons. You probably have an older list than I assume. Maybe. Than I do, I would assume.
Well, I think the funny part was, part of the reason we got talking about this too, was I actually found an old set of TaylorMade Tour Preferred TD heads that I happened to have downstairs, and they were from the late 1980s, and they're actually part of my list as far as one of the top five irons all time. And what was neat about them was that, you know, they're more like a traditional type blade, but they actually were hollow in the 1-4 iron that was offered, and I have a 2 iron and a 4 to pitching wedge. And it was funny, I posted them and then all sorts of people are like, hey, I've got a set of those, or that was my first set, or I've got a bunch of those sets and I want another one. Will you be willing to sell me, you know, one of those sets of heads? But I think I'm gonna make it a project and put it together. And yeah, for sure. I mean, it wasn't one of the sets that I had. I mean, I owned like ICW5s, and there's another couple sets in here that I'll talk in my list, and I'll let you get some of yours as well. But, you know, that first one that I will mention is that Tour Preferred set. They came out for about 3 years in the late 80s, and they were a pretty solid set of irons.
Yeah, before you go too much further, I have that set of irons on my list as well. I think I remember those ones actually were one of those first sets that I did on a re-grip, where it was like an older set that I was like, damn, like I'd pay good money. And these guys, these were in great condition. They had S300s in them, and just like, it was a great set, and they look like just butter knives from back then, obviously. But, you know, doing some research, I remember when seeing them, was those hollow long irons, which obviously took a long, long time to catch on in the rest of the golf industry. And at the time, a lot of people thought were a gimmick. And now, you know, every long iron has some sort of hollow to them to launch the ball as high as they can in the air. And a beauty set of clubs. I would love to get my hands on them. I can't wait to see what yours look like once that project's done.
Yeah, it was always funny because, you know, you'd get clubs, just like you said, and you'd get them in the shop for regripping. And I cannot tell you how many sets over the years where I end up offering to buy them off of somebody because I thought, oh, that set's really cool. It's an older set. I haven't seen one in a while. You know, hey, would you sell this?
And, oh, I did that many a times. Yeah. I mean, it was against our rules of the store I was working at, but still, like, there's certain ones I never got away. Like, there's still, I talked about it on here, there's a set of irons that got away, and I'm constantly looking at them, and maybe we'll talk about them when we break down our favorite Nike irons in the future.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Why don't you hit up your next all right, set?
One of the other ones, and I think you maybe had one of these sets as well. So for a couple of years, again, it was in the early 90s, was a retailer. I was actually playing TaylorMade stuff for a few years. I had been playing some Callaway stuff, and they came out with a Burner Tour iron that I just love the size of it, the shape of it. Now, it did have the funky copper color in the back, but I just like the shape. And Ernie Els was playing them at the time, and then he ended up going on to another set from there. But I really like the look of them. They had sort of a, you know, they they rounded sort of edges. They didn't have the sharp corners, but they had that nice compact size, and I really liked that set. So it wasn't a popular one for a lot of people, but for me it was.
Yeah, I had this on my list, but I'm talking about the version that came out kind of the 2010s.
Yeah,
2010 area. Yeah. And they also, they came out with, they had those, the first super speed, something speed. They were black, and then they did the white version, the first white head. I'm drawing a blank on the name here.
Okay.
But if you look it up, somebody will tell you whatever they are.
For
but
sure.
Those are my first set of irons. And I remember the tours were on sale. I shouldn't have had the tours, but, you know, they're on sale. I'm a college kid. I had no money. My dad bought them for me for a birthday present or something.
But did you think automatically they're going to make you a tour player?
I remember one time just absolutely thinning a 7-iron, like as thin as it could go, and it went like 175 yards. I remember telling my dad and be like, "Oh, hey," I remember him being like, "Did it get off the ground?" no. He's like, "Yeah, kid, you know, stay in school." But yeah, I had the 2010 reboot of the Bitburner Tours is one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, one of the things that people got to remember is that some of these names got recycled a little bit over the years within the brand. So, you know, we're obviously talking about specific ones. So if you generally, if you go and you look up one and you go, "Oh, how did you play that?" Probably wasn't the one that we played. It was just maybe the name was used in a different, you know, either a different iron or maybe even a different geographic region where they just took the name and used it for something else. So, one of the other ones that I had, and I still have a set of these, is the TaylorMade 300 forged irons. You know, it was a larger cavity back design. Jeff, our publisher from Flagstaff, actually had a set of them, and he played them and really, really liked them. And I can remember I went and caddied for him in a tournament. Every time I'd pick them up, I'm like, "Man, I like those irons. I like those irons." And then he got to a point where he didn't like them anymore. And so I'm like, "Hey, I'll give you whatever it was, $150 or something for them," or whatever, and kept them. And then the funny part is I didn't play them for that long, still have them. And then over the years, he's always reached back out to me and said, "Hey, do you have that? Do you have that set of irons still?" And I'm like, "I'm not parting with them. Sorry."
But, I'm looking at these. These are beauties. They remind me of like a classic Titleist cavity back.
Yeah,
just
pretty much.
Looking at them, they absolute beauties. I haven't ever seen these until you mentioned that there. And yeah, that's a classic looking iron.
Yeah, they're a little larger than what it might look like when you look at the photos, but really soft as far as the feel was concerned, very playable. Only problem with them came down to the short irons because they looked a little bit bulky and they were a little bit larger. Not everybody really was a fan of them, but some of the easiest to hit long irons ever. What else have you got on your list?
Yeah, so my next one, so you've done three, I'll throw in my third here. The TaylorMade Rack, the MBs, and the Smoke Edition.
Smoke,
now,
yes.
Now, I'm not one. I've never had dark irons and never had dark wedges. I'm very classic silver, chrome look. But these ones are just spectacular. The MBs in particular. Look them up. Like, they could come out with this now and you'd be like, "Damn, that is so good."
Yeah.
I'm looking at these now and I might have to get onto eBay once quarantine ends and find a set of these. And TaylorMade, if you're listening, I wouldn't mind if you looked into some old drawers in the factory's places, because I wouldn't mind taking those off your hands. But that's my next set from TaylorMade.
Yeah, they're one and a variation of them that was on my list as well, and they just are so good looking. They had they had sort of a blended cavity set as well, you know, a mixed set, which is really nice. But that in the smoke finish is really sharp, and they're definitely ones that they didn't make a lot of sets of, and you know, they're one that if you look around the forums and stuff like that, they're still coveted. So you're not going to probably find a set of those really cheap, or at least a set that's in really good condition, but I think some people bought them based on the look and they found out pretty quickly that maybe their capability wasn't there to play them. So, you know, maybe if you can find somebody like that, you'll end up with a set of them.
Oh, absolutely. Most of these irons, like, I would never put in the bag full time, because that's how hard they would be to hit. It's pure look and just having some swagger in the bag.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we come forward as far as a forgiveness, you know, that type of iron, probably not the easiest to make use of. But, you know, the P790s, now they have a second version of those out now, but the very first version of those irons, I think that was one of the biggest irons of all time for TaylorMade. And it has been, and that franchise is still continuing of just, you know, we'll call it a super iron, some easy to hit, especially in the long irons, a lot of speed off it. Wasn't always the best for a player that's looking for a lot of precision, because maybe they get a little heater off the, you know, higher off the face, or, you know, a little bit more of a knuckleball, but just easy to hit. I mean, you know, what I couldn't wrap my brain around, I remember going and doing a fitting and going through them. And I was literally, because of stronger lofts, launch conditions, spin rates, everything like that, you know, my 7-iron was like 12 yards further with the P790 versus, I think, the 770 that I was like testing it against. But you couldn't. I mean, it's free yardage. So for the person that's looking for that yardage, looking for that forgiveness, you couldn't beat it. They look great. They look more like a traditional club, even though they have that inner cavity back. And they will definitely be a set that for a long time will be considered a classic for TaylorMade, I think.
I agree 100%. And I think TaylorMade's actually really improved in their iron game. Like, if we talk, a lot of our sets were kind of older sets. And I think they, you know, they, in my opinion, didn't have, you know, the best run of iron sets from, you know, the 2010 to 2015, 2016 era. But the latest run that they've been on with these iron sets, creating way more classics. And this one, I think, is going to be a classic for all time. And, you know, having this name attached to it doesn't hurt. But the P7TW, the Tiger Woods blades, hefty price tag, something that you could put on the wall and never hit once. But boy, are these good looking. I was able to get my hands on them in person when I went up to the TaylorMade factory for the TaylorMade Canada facility for a fitting early last year. And man, these are great. Could I ever hit them? Probably not. Would I gain them just because they look that good? Absolutely. These will go down as an all-time classic for TaylorMade.
Yeah, for sure. I think the last set for me would have been the Tour Preferreds from 2009. There's a model in there, a cavity back that was really sharp. Was a really nice blend of, you know, sort of a classic tour-like shape, but still have some forgiveness and things like that. Like you said, there's so many over the years. And I think what people will find is if they can go back, and it's much like this for a lot of the manufacturers, and we'll talk about this on different shows as well, is that, you know, you can go back and find some irons that you can probably find for a low price. And we've done that before on the show. We've gone back and set a price list and go in and find some irons, but really playable. You could still put them in your bag today, as long as they're in decent condition, throw some, you know, new grips on them. There's a ton of models that, you know, you wouldn't play any worse just because they're in your bag.
No, absolutely. So my last one is actually my favorite line TaylorMade's ever done. And it was the 2011 line of the Tour Preferred iron. So they did three sets. They did the cavity back,
yes,
the muscle back. But the one that I loved the most was the muscle cavity right in between. They had that thing that looked like a wrench could fit in on the back. I figured that's where they put who knows what to balance out the iron. But I had a buddy that had these forever. And then, you know, after putting so many shafts in it, he had them covered in lead tape, and they still just look so good. I've been looking for a set of these forever. Just such a classic design. As I said, it was the next one up after they did that 2009 line that you just talked about.
Right, yeah.
It's that nice silver and gray and just very minimalist. There wasn't much on it, just kind of TaylorMade MC or TaylorMade MB. We sold so many of these in the store. I wish I bought a set back then, and I'm going to be looking. There's a couple sets. I feel like by the end of us breaking down our top five favorite irons for all these brands, my garage is going to look like yours by the end of it. But those are ones that look those ones up. Of all of them that I told you, look those ones up, and they're a classic, and you could probably find them cheap. I think so, and you wouldn't notice a difference.
Yeah, I had a pretty bad run for a while where, you know, I just run into a set and I just go ahead and buy it. And, you know, I just ended up with too many of them. And you know, the temptation is there, especially for the pricing. I mean, I think it's sort of like that muscle car that, you know, somebody goes back and buys because they they couldn't get it when they were, you know, maybe they're 20 years old and they couldn't afford it. And then, you know, 20 years later, they go, oh, now I can afford it. And they go back and get that retro car. Mm-hmm. So I think that was always the case for me with a lot of irons. I'd go back and, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about different ones in the last week where they're after, especially after that, you know, I showed that picture of those 87s. I talked about, you know, Australian blades from the 70s, and you know, we'll get into a bunch of different McGregor irons and just tons and tons. And actually I'll mention one last one, which is not in my five, but if you happen to see it, and I got access to a 3-iron of it that I occasionally have around the hitting bay where I'm at, but one of the very original TaylorMade irons was called a KVD iron, and it was Ken Venturi design. And this goes right back to their early days in 79. And it's just a straight classic blade. They didn't make a lot of them, but it's a cool set to have. But I guarantee you, though, if you pull out the 3-iron, you love the look of it. You might not look, or you might not like how it feels or performs when you try to make a swing at it. But, you know, they look good, and they're kind of a cool set if you're into sort of retro stuff.
Absolutely. Well, that was fun. I like doing that list. And clearly, we like the same look in a head. We like that kind of very small, compact head. Neither of us play blades, but we clearly both like the look of them. Speaking about not playing blades, did you see this interview on golf.com with Kevin Na just basically chirping the world for anyone that plays blades? And he just basically said, like, he doesn't get it. I don't know why anyone else. They're too hard to hit. Did you take a read into that? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw it quickly. I didn't hear the actual podcast interview that he had on it. And, you know, he made sure, I think in some ways, that he clarified that it's, you know, about him and his preference. But he did say, you know, basically people are stupid if they don't play him. But I think what he has to take into account, though, is that people from a fitting standpoint are always looking for different things. And really, when it comes down to it, yes, I get it. You're looking for consistent ball speed off a wider area of the face, which is what you're generally going to get with more of the cavity back designs. But the issue that comes with it is that, you know, when you get a lot of the cavity back designs, sometimes you have to have other compromises, whether it's the shape of the sole, how much offset is there, the size of the head, feel and feedback. Some players want to be able to get feedback of, if I don't hit it on center and I'm not getting the distance that I want that feedback so that I can adjust a little bit. So, you know, that's fine for him if he wants to put it that way. And I'm not saying that, you know, Joe Consumer should go out and buy a set of blades and expect to play as well or whatever, but really individual. And, you know, that's up to your fitter and working with your fitter to find out what your actual preferences are. I know some people that are, you know, they're not great players. They're not great ball strikers, but, you know, they get a lot more confidence by setting up a club that, you know, has a little bit more of a blade look. You know, those Tiger Woods TaylorMade irons, for an example, really clean leading edge. For some people, they align that better. And also as well, you know, how they swing the golf club and how that sole interacts with the turf. Sometimes that works better for somebody over a cavity back design. So there's a lot more factors than just maybe the MOI of the head and just the shape of it. So that's fine for Kevin Na. You know, it's probably a general statement that's okay, but, you know, I wouldn't say it's a blanket statement. What about you?
I decided to go into a bit of more like performance wise of Kevin Na to make it more sense. I mean, if anyone ever thought Kevin Na was a bomber, that was wrong. He's ranked currently this year was 188th in the world and on the PGA Tour for driving distance, which basically means, you know, if his driving distance is slow, his iron distance is probably not that that far either. So he probably wants a little bit more distance out of his irons. And then just looking at his actual ball striking in general, he's currently 177th on the PGA Tour and greens in regulation percentage. That being said, the guy gets the job done. We love Kevin Na. Let's clarify that. This is a guy that is fun to watch. He may be slow, and that's what he's known for. This is a guy that put up a 15 at one point on a par 3. So just for that alone, I'm a fan of his. But I think there's reasonings behind this. If you look at somebody like Rory McIlroy, though, like, him playing blades makes sense. The guy hits moon balls. He wants to be able to flight it down, where I believe Kevin's just like, get it as far as I can. Give me some workability. I'll make the rest work.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's like Tiger, for an example, playing traditional lofts. I mean, he wants a particular yardage for his shots. He wants a particular feedback. So again, it comes down to the individual player. And, you know, mentioning that as far as cavity backs and how their performance is, I mean, we're not talking about just consistency left to right. We're talking about consistency front to back as well. So, I mean, I mentioned that with a P790, which, you know, is a rocket launcher. You can really hit some great shots with it. But sometimes, you know, if you're not getting the same distance all the time forward to back, you want that consistency. And I'll give up some yardage if I know that, you know, my ball striking is going to be a little bit better and I can control my distances a little bit better. Maybe you put that cavity back in there to use it for more of a distance club. If that's the case, that's fine. But if you're looking for precision, then maybe that's not where you want to be.
I like it. And maybe this is something we'll bring up with our guests today. Not just one. We have two guests today. Two returning guests. Corey Connors is returning onto the podcast for the second time. And we brought along his caddy, Kyle Peppers, who's returning on for the 331st time. He's on every other week, it feels like. We've only done 60 episodes. He's somehow done 330. But why don't we give a call down to Florida and a call down to Carolina, see what these boys are up to in quarantine. And maybe they have some thoughts on blades versus cavity backs and, you know, what they're doing right now, because we're all kind of doing the same thing. So without further ado, Corey Connors and Kyle Peppers. All right, folks, we'd like to welcome back on the podcast Corey Connors, second time on, and his caddy back on the podcast for, as I said earlier, the 330th time. He comes on every other week to chat with us, one of our favorites. How is it going, boys? Wow.
It's going good. Yeah, trying to stay healthy down in Florida.
All good in the hood here in South Carolina.
You golfed today, Peppers. How did that go?
It was good. The weather was perfect. It was like 75 and sunny. We had everybody had their own cart and stayed away from each other. So it was fun.
Have you been able to golf at all, Corey? What's the practice routine going on like right now?
Yeah, there's some of the private clubs down here are still open. I've been able to play a little bit, but you know, tried to stay inside as much as possible. But yeah, same thing. I did go and play a couple of days ago, and I've mostly been walking, but everyone takes their own carts and, you know, don't touch the flags or anything. Kind of some standard stuff for places that are open, but it is nice to be able to get out there, and I'm really happy that the course is still open. It's getting a little bit stir crazy, I think, with out that kind of option.
Are the courses busy? I mean, both of you are obviously, you know, in different states, but, you know, are there many people that are actually out there?
Not crazy down here. I think, you know, a lot of the members are maybe a little more seasonal and have gone back north for the summertime, but there's still a few people playing. I guess it depends when you go out there. Certain times it has been busy, but like I said, I've only been out there a couple times in the last few weeks, so not a great sample size, but hasn't really been too busy.
So what are you guys doing to fill your time? I mean, you're home a little bit more than you're both used to. Are you getting into any new hobbies or just spending time with loved ones and watching lots of TV?
What you got, Peppers?
Yeah, I've just been playing on the PS4 and watching Netflix, and that's pretty much it. Nicole's cooking a bunch, so I'm eating like all these cookies and cakes and stuff that she's making, so kind of getting out of shape up here.
But one thing you've been doing, Peppers, you're working on your stick handling with the hockey stick and a ball. I'm not going to let you break it down. Corey, did you see this video? And I want you to break down your thoughts on his skill set here.
Well, I got to give him credit. He's really getting serious about it, and not too bad. I'm really in no position to be chirping. I feel like I'm a pretty good stick handler, but he's got a pretty good grasp for it. I'm fairly impressed. I think he's working his way into some good form.
Well, I mean, you've never played hockey before ever, Peppers. And whose skates did you buy?
I got Keith Yandel's. They're a really good pair of skates. He's got the exact same shoe size or skate size as me. but I guess in the NHL, all those skates are molded to their feet. He's got kind of a weird shaped foot, so I got to break him in. But yeah, they're like really good, high quality skates, and I got them for a couple hundred bucks, so I got a good deal on them.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
Play a little bit, maybe come up and play a little pond hockey some winter.
Yeah, it really sucks like being home for this long and like not being able to do anything. Like I would really want to go up. Like before they quarantined everybody, me and Nicole were going to the ice palace here, and we were going skating every day. So that was a lot of fun. It sucks to just be stuck indoors.
So other than practicing your stick handling and watching him stick handle on Instagram there, Corey, what have you been up to in your spare time here?
Yeah, mostly the same. I got an Xbox, similar style, playing some games. Wife and I got a little home gym set up, so I've been trying to stay in shape a little bit. That's same with Kyle, doing a lot of eating, but I've been the chef, making some good meals and some snacks, lots of good stuff. And we got a Peloton bike as well, so I've been grinding on that. And
Do you guys play any golf video games? We've been talking about that a little bit on the show and of sort of our experiences over the years, but do you guys play any golf video games at all, or just do something else?
I really haven't. When I first qualified for the Masters, my now wife, who was a girlfriend at the time, she bought me a PlayStation and the Masters edition of Tiger Woods, whatever it was, like Tiger Woods 14 or something like that. So grinded at Augusta on the PlayStation with that. But with the new Xbox, I haven't played any golf games, a lot of NHL, and I like the car racing games, so been into that a little bit.
Interesting. Didn't know you played NHL. Might have to set up a game sometime.
I shouldn't brag about playing. I'm very horrible, but I tried to play online. I like couldn't touch the puck. I'm like, Jesus, this is not good.
Maybe you and Kyle can set up. He posted a score of 15-0 on his Instagram on rookie mode. May as well have just had an empty net in there, Kyle.
Yeah, I've worked up to like pro level now. I did a little bit of semi pro, and I'm up to pro now.
There you go. So if your like practice routine, Corey, is probably getting some swings and stuff involved and hitting the gym a lot, what does yours look like, Kyle? How are you staying in game time shape to be a caddy? Are you walking? Are you reading your old yardage books? What are you doing?
I guess the first couple weeks at home, I was still kind of running around the neighborhood, and I've completely given up on it. Nicole's just making me all these sweets and cooking all this food. I'm just stuck on the couch now. So it's haven't done a whole lot of stuff. I did. I got the PS4 game called The Golf Club, I think is the name of it. And they have all the TPC courses on there. So there's like, you know, six or seven golf courses that we play. So it doesn't help that much, but you can kind of at least like see the routing of some holes and stuff, and it'll be familiar when we get there. So I've done that a little bit.
That makes sense. So last week on the pod, we did this game where we both gave our top five players we're most worried about coming out of quarantine. Let's bring it over to the caddies, since you know all the caddies, Kyle. Who are the five caddies you're most worried about coming out of quarantine?
Five caddies that I'm worried about.
Yeah.
Including yourself.
You can throw yourself in there. Yeah.
As far as being like completely out of shape or what?
Whatever they get into. I mean, if you look at Dale, like, is he just eating bacon and smoking cigarettes?
Dale is number one. Maybe Aaron Fleener would be up there. Gino Benali, that caddies for Joel Damon. He's at least on the golf course. I've seen some of his Instagram.
See, we argued that maybe his life hasn't even changed. He's just not traveling. He's just actually eating better.
Yeah, he might be. who else? Dave Stone, I think, has stayed relatively normal throughout this whole thing. He's sticking to his normal routine. Who would be number five? I can't think of anyone. Corey, can you help me?
I don't know. I'm not too worried about you. I know you'll be in fine shape when we get back up there. So make sure you don't throw yourself in there.
Yeah, but, put me in at number five.
Yeah. Corey, is there anyone that of the players that you're worried about? Or I mean, you're not worried about them. They're your competition, yeah. But you'd be like, eh.
I really don't think so. I think, you know, at this point, all the players are trying to use this as a positive and trying to improve in one way or another. And I'm sure everyone's taking good care of their bodies. You know, you see a lot of the guys posting on social media about, you know, getting workouts in and trying to recoup the body. I think everyone's pretty much using this time to pretty seriously trying to, you know, recover their body, get in better shape and try and give themselves a good chance to get right back into it whenever we are able to get started. So I'm not really worried about anyone. I think there's so much on the line for us players and even the caddies too. They're going to be in good shape.
So obviously, you know, we're a year removed from a very big week for you guys. We know the Masters was obviously didn't take place this past week, but the week before the Valspar, they were showing the replay of it. Now, did both of you watch the replay of it? I know, Corey, I think you watched it finally for the first time. Is that right?
Yeah, the Valero.
The Valero. Why did I say Valspar?
That one was on pretty recently too, where I was leading and didn't play good the final day. So yeah, learned from that one. But I did watch the coverage at the Valero and it was pretty cool to see. So I really hadn't been able to sit down and watch. I saw some of the highlight clips and whatever, but it was kind of cool to hear what the announcers were saying in certain times, whatever. I enjoyed it. It was kind of a good trip down memory lane for my wife and I getting to watch it together because we had a cool experience together and she got a lot of airtime and everybody got to see her emotional state out there.
I was going to say, who got more airtime, Kyle or your wife?
Definitely Mal.
Definitely Mal, probably. Yeah, I don't know. She was a hot topic on the TV.
Peppers, you watched it. What was your viewing experience like?
Yeah, that was my first time getting to watch it as well. So I got it recorded and watched it with my parents and Nicole, and then my parents went home and we watched it over again. So yeah, it was fun.
Life changing experience. Now, I'm curious, like in the let's call it an off season. This might be the only off season you guys are going to get this year, based on, you know, if they're pushing back the schedule. Let's call it the off season. How often are you guys talking? You know, do you guys keep in touch often? Once a week is. Or is this the first time you guys seen each other since we wrapped it up at Sawgrass?
First time we've seen each other, but stay in touch a little bit. I think kind of ramp things up a little bit and communicate a little bit more leading up whenever some things get announced. I think the tour's, you know, trying to get things figured out. And once they have a plan, once we know when we're going to be back out there, I think we'll be coordinating a little bit more. But yeah, we spend quite a bit of time together, so it's nice to have a break once in a while.
Kyle, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, correct answer.
Perfect caddy answer. Well, the last time you guys obviously saw each other was at Sawgrass. We were able to finish one round there. You know, you opened up with a 68. How are you guys feeling after that? Obviously, Hideki threw out a little bit of a 63 to start that tournament, but how are you feeling going into the rest of the week?
Yeah, I felt like things were starting to turn around. We played a lot and I'd kind of struggled a little bit in the weeks before and just got out of sync a little bit, which has happened before, but I was really on the right track of getting back into it. And I had gained a lot of confidence heading into that week and did some good preparation. Yeah, I was feeling good and it was great to get a decent round to start the event. And, you know, definitely my confidence was building throughout the round and I was really excited, you know, to try and keep it going for the rest of the event. Obviously that didn't happen, but I was feeling much better about my game. Was kind of just getting back into playing easier, simple golf and stress-free golf, which is good for me and Kyle enjoys that, I think, as well.
Was there any chatter when you guys were out there amongst the players or the tour that's where it was heading? Did you have that sense after Thursday? Because, you know, from home, it seemed like everything was going to go as planned. They were going to move the fans on Friday and then finish it up. And obviously from the morning till that point, drastic changes had happened, not only in the world, but their stance on the tour.
Yeah, was it like after 9, Kyle, that someone said something to us?
Yeah,
or something?
Yeah, it was right after 9, yeah.
Yeah, so we like kind of got word that we were going to play on Friday with no fans try and play the rest of the event with no fans on Friday. So, you know, we were playing Thursday morning. That was going to be our, whatever, only time with fans, which, you know, it was kind of weird to think about, but didn't want to worry about it too much. Just keep trying to play golf. Yeah, and then after the round, they kind of had a formal, you know, statement that said, you know, they shared with us and said they were going to try and keep playing the tournament, you know, but no fans. They felt like the players were going to be safe in, you know, the situation when they were the only ones out there. And yeah, that was fine. We were planning to do that. Obviously things escalated and, you know, other sports leagues decided to suspend their play at that point, and the tour kind of followed along, which I think, you know, looking back now was a good idea, and just try and get things shut down as quick as possible.
So if we get a resumption here at some point, you've obviously got, you know, a great amount of status and you're in a great position, but, you know, will you be looking to sort of play every event when the schedule resumes, or is that sort of a decision you'll make when that sort of happens?
Yeah, I think that'll be, we'll figure that out when we know what the schedule is, but I definitely won't try and play every week. I think ideally if I can do, you know, like 3 weeks in a row and then have a week off, it's pretty nice. You know, just, yeah, you know, playing 4, 5, 6 weeks in a row gets pretty tiring. You can fall into some bad habits. And, you know, I think the time off for me personally is good. Like after the players, I didn't play for 2 weeks, and, you know, when I played a few times since then, and then my games felt awesome and haven't really practiced that much, just kind of back to the basic stuff and back to some, you know, easy swing thoughts that have, you know, gotten me where I am now. And they work. So some little time off to refresh the mind and not have too high of expectations is good as well.
So you're the opposite of Sungjae. You can't play every single day and practice 10 hours a day.
Yeah, that was I was thinking about him one day. I was trying to figure out where he was at, and assumed he'd be missing it for sure.
Yeah, we speculated, like, what would he be up to right now? Is he just in a hotel room? Because he said he doesn't have a place, right? And mm-hmm. I mean, I know
I think he may have went back to, you know, knowing it was going to be maybe a bit of a longer delay, might have went back to Korea.
But that makes sense.
Surprised he's not playing on the Outlaw Tour or the minor league tour.
They did have to close down the minor league tour down here. There was a bunch of guys who were trying to play, but they closed down all the courses in Palm Beach County, which is where they play most of the time.
Probably a good thing. I mean, you know, the Outlaw Tour was still posting, you know, events right up until it felt like 2 weeks ago. And, you know, eventually they had to shut that down. But I believe they deemed golf in Arizona still essential. So I guess they could technically resume. It's not like there's fans.
I think
there.
They did. They were having an event. Yeah, they were having an event right now, I think. And same thing in Florida. Golf was deemed essential. So most of the state, it's still open, but some individual counties have decided to close it down. The county I live in actually is closed down, but where I'm a member is in a different county. So we're still.
They also deemed wrestling essential in Florida, which might be the most Florida story I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, I'm probably not going to go looking for any wrestling matches to get myself out of the house, I'll tell you that.
The last time we talked to Kyle was just after all of us ran into each other at the waste management down in Phoenix. We got Kyle's thoughts from a caddy's perspective and how it might be one of the most exhausting weeks mentally and physically. Just you're all over the place all week. How is it as a player from your perspective, the craziness of that whole event?
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, it's tough. You are all over the place, and the range of emotions is huge. You know, there's always those last few holes in the back of your mind, no matter if you're teeing off on 1 or 10, starting out your round. you're just kind of thinking about those holes throughout the whole day. So there's so much more on your mind, you know, they're going to be crazy. And I found one of the craziest times when we were finishing on the front nine, when it was late in the evening on one of the days, and there's just people, you know, spilling out of the 16, they're going for the exits. And I don't know, we were on like 7, 8, 9, and there's just people everywhere. You know, they had no idea that there's people trying to golf, and it's kind of funny, some obnoxious people, but yeah, it's crazy. It was a unique experience for sure.
The funny thing about that course too, is like, if you played 1, 2, and 3, maybe 4, you would never know that like one is like, you're in a subdivision. There's houses everywhere too. Same thing. And then all of a sudden you turn, then you can kind of see 16. And then you probably from there, just the anxiety levels are just building.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you try and take it one hole at a time as best you can, but you know, everybody's thinking about those holes, and it was pretty fun. I hit some good shots on 16, almost made an ace on Saturday, I think. Hit it really close, and that was fun.
We're going to see some weird things with the schedule here when it returns, including the Masters in November. For you guys, I mean, did you watch any of the Masters replays, the rewind? Did you watch the Tiger replay that was on, or was that something that just, you know, you sort of, you know, don't pay attention to?
What you got, Peppers?
I did not watch any of it. I saw a couple shots here and there, but I didn't sit down and watch the replay. I saw that Tiger commentated on his Sunday round, I think. That would have been cool to watch, but just had other stuff going on, so I didn't watch any of it.
Yeah, I got to watch a little bit of it. I thought it was kind of cool, you know, hearing some of Tiger's insights, and obviously we were playing, so I didn't get to see it as well. And really, it was a historic event, and obviously he's done so much in his career, but that was a pretty special moment even for him. And I was able to go out on the course and watch him play 18, which was really cool. So it's kind of remembering back to that, but I'd never seen him play the last few holes, or really his whole round on TV. I think when we finished, I went to the locker room and he hit it close on 16. Yeah, that's when everyone started to get pretty excited that seemed like he was going to get it done. So I thought it was pretty cool to watch. I was a huge Tiger fan growing up, and just seeing how he plotted his way around the golf course and just really patient. You know, he played solid, but nothing was overly flashy, just some really good golf, and it was enough.
That's a fair statement. Have you had many interactions with him? Is he somebody, you know, you grew up being a fan? Do you remember the first time meeting him, or have you even met him or played with him yet?
Yeah, I never played with him. I've met him a couple of times, but I remember the first time that I saw him in person was at the Canadian Open as a kid. I don't know when the last one he would have played, but the early 2000s, I think it was. And yeah, he was just like a superhuman. I mean, even now he's, you know, he just has his presence is felt by everyone. Just has
an aura.
Awesome mystique aura about him. And, yeah, it's cool to get to, you know, tee it up at some events with them. Look forward to getting paired with them.
Yeah, that'll be a story for sure. Well, every week on the pod, we do a mailbag. People submit a bunch of questions, and we answer them. We figured, why don't we really mix this up? Let's let's expand it, and we'll bring the questions here, and maybe we'll all answer them and take it there. You guys, sounds good to you guys?
Sounds good.
All right, Scotty, why don't you open the mailbag? Tell them what we have.
All right, let's start with this. What are you missing the most about golf right now? Corey, you want to handle that one first?
Yeah. I mean, just the, you know, the adrenaline that pumps through your body when you're playing competitive golf. It's something that has consumed my life for, you know, the last 10 years probably. And, you know, being without it, it's my longest break from golf in years, so it's very unusual. But yeah, I'm pretty hungry and really looking forward to getting back out there. But yeah, just some adrenaline that gets going when you're out there, get the blood flowing, you just get yourself in the zone. There's no feeling like that, and something that I miss for sure.
Kyle, you play today, but I'm sure you miss the professional game as well.
Yeah, for me, I think it's the camaraderie. Like, you know, a lot of those guys out there, some of my best friends, so I miss seeing them every day. Yeah, just hanging out with all those guys. That's what I miss the most.
I feel you on that. We're not able to play in Ontario right now. It's shut down completely. And it's also the weather's not that great either. But yeah, for me, it's just the chirps, just, you know, your buddy just railing one in the trees after thinking he's going to hit the par five and two and just chirping them for two holes about it. That's what I miss the most. You know, you can do that over video games, but it's really not the same.
Yeah. For me, it's, you know, it's just getting out to the golf courses and seeing everybody running into the other pros, all the people you're used to seeing all the time. First thing in the spring, all the golfers that are out there, they're really excited to play. And, you know, they all just want to talk about golf. So, yeah, it comes down to the people for me.
Cool. What's next in the mailbag, Scotty?
All right. Here's a good one. If you could go back and start golf all over again, what would you do differently? And Corey's going to probably say win the 2010 Ontario Junior at Listowel, right?
Yeah, that was a tough loss for me coming off some good golf. But I can't really say too much. I feel like, you know, I was really fortunate with my upbringing. You know, grew up in a great place in Listowel, at the Listowel Golf Club. Yeah, things have gone pretty well for me. I can't really complain, you know, achieved some dreams I had when I was a kid. And hopefully, you know, keep on this path and keep getting better and have more success.
Peppers?
For me, I think I was self-taught. So I grew up just kind of watching TV and reading books and doing it on my own. If I was going to do it all over again, I think it would have been to find a coach that I worked with at least once a week. I think that helps a lot. I did have a guy that I worked with a lot when I was in high school, but it wasn't every week. It might've been once a month. But I think if you get somebody that you talk to and work with a lot, that would have helped me out a lot.
I agree with that for sure. I'm actually going to go a different direction. I'd probably try to start caddying earlier. I'm not a great golfer, but I'm a better caddy. I'm not even a good caddy. So if I started earlier, I may have had a much better shot here. Just, you know, small tournaments and stuff. And I enjoy it just as much as playing. So that's my answer.
Yeah, I'm right with Kyle. I didn't get a lot of instruction early on, had to figure out a lot of things for myself. So now as a PGA pro, I know how important that is. And I'd probably have done that as well. But hey, I'm happy where it's at. All right, next one here. This one's kind of an odd one. It'd be very interesting to see what your questions are. Now, these are answers or questions that obviously come in from our listeners. Who is the weirdest, worst random person you've ever been paired with? So, you know, show up at a golf course, all of a sudden, maybe it's a celebrity, something else, or just whatever situation. Is there something that's happened where it's been just an odd random pairing? It could be in a tournament. You never know.
I think the first thing that came to my mind, we had a cool experience this year in LA at Riviera. I don't know if Kyle's going to know what I'm going to say. Played with this, walked to the first tee, get the scorecard, and, you know, my name's there. And the other guy in my group, the name written down is The Miz. I'm like, that's interesting. Like, pretty cool. Whatever. I don't know. I thought at first he was like a member, and, you know, the guy making the scorecards is just putting his nickname down there, but ended up being a famous WWE wrestling superstar who was like the wrestling champion. I'm not a
not a WrestleMania WWE guy, eh?
WrestleMania guy, unfortunately. So I really didn't know who he was, but awesome guy, big character. Yeah, he wasn't a great golfer, but had a lot of fun with them. He was loud and he thought he was going to crush every ball and got humbled a little bit. I made fun of his iron covers and we had a good day, but it was crazy. Unexpected, cool pairing for me.
Kyle, you got one from your playing days?
That was one of my first thoughts. A lot of the pro-ams, you get just really random people. I mean, there in LA, I think we played behind Albert Pujols. That was pretty cool to see him out there. Is it Jared Goff, the quarterback for the Rams, I think?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
A lot of time you see a lot of weird things in the pro-ams. I remember one pro-am we played with a guy, and he held his golf club, like he gripped it like a hockey stick. you know, hands spread apart and just the weirdest swing. You see a lot of weird things in the pro-ams. So.
You ask them for tips on stick handling or what?
No.
that same pro-am actually played the other, one of the other guys, Josh Kelly, the hole-in-one trick shots guy on Instagram. So he was doing some trick shots out there. Very, very impressive. He's a really good golfer. But some of the stuff he did out there was pretty sweet. Like hit a bunker shot from his knees that had just a crazy amount of spin. I don't know. It was pretty sweet. He pounded it as well.
I don't know about you guys. I'm getting sick of the trick shots right now. I think they're driving me nuts. We don't need to get into that too much. They take skill, but if you're just hitting a ping pong ball into a red solo cup for like 3,000 tries and then you post it, I don't really need to see it. For me, I got paired with this guy in this tournament one time, and it's the classic, you know, I'm going to go pro guy that like he's waiting to be able to go on the senior tour. And after day one of the tournament, so he claimed he shot 65 in his practice round. He shot 96 in his, in the tournament round. And on the fifth hole, he three putted from like 6 feet and he spikes his ball into the green, just leaving a giant divot. And I was like, oh, I got it. Don't worry. Had to fix his divot all around. And then, he wasn't actually allowed to play the next day because there was too many complaints about this guy. So, just an absolute psychopath who knows where he is right now.
I love the, oh man, I shot 65 yesterday. I don't know what happened to me today. I just can't make a par.
Also like one of like two guys in this amateur event. That's just for fun with caddies out there. Love those guys.
Yeah, I've had a couple of funny ones over the years, and I actually changed my mind. One that I played with quickly was a guy who had a putter that was only like 17 inches long, and he putted with one hand. And he said he started with it about 35 inches, and then every year he cut it shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, and eventually he was down to this one hand. But it was the wackiest thing I've ever seen. The other one on that vein of your, you know, your guy who's going to tear the tour apart, I played in a Canadian Open qualifier at Hidden Lake, and Corey will know where that golf course is. I think it was like 1992, and I played with a guy. We went to IDR Golf Balls. Thankfully, I didn't have his card, but he was playing a Wilson Pro Staff spin, and he actually said, good ball, good value to me on the first thing. And I thought, oh, this is going to be bad. So, like I said, I'm glad I didn't have his card. He hit a ball into the parking lot, I think on their ninth hole, I think he shot maybe 95 or something like that. And it was just a disaster to walk all day. And I can remember on a par three that was, I don't know, it was maybe like 190, and he literally tops it. And then we go and look back, and he's checking his yardage. And the guy says, hey, you know what, buddy, you're 20 yards ahead of where you hit it. You don't need a yardage, just going or whatever. So, I mean, it's just stuff like that. Sometimes it just makes you shake your head. All right. Next one here. Is there something that you're really like almost OCD about in the golf course? And actually, you know, you can probably both of you can answer this for each other. what's Kyle's thing that he's always, you know, a little bit more compulsive about? And Kyle, you can do the same for Corey as well.
I mean, just before they go, one of these has way higher risk to the answer than the other.
Well, the first thing that I thought of, and we're both very similar with this, is the like our yardage book is pretty organized, and like, you know, Kyle has, you know, certain things in certain spots, and you know, we have, you know, little things that we've always done to have all the information in there to relate back to. That was the first thing that came to my head for me, and I know Kyle does the same thing, just keeping stuff organized from year to year, from day to day. You know, started playing the same courses over and over, so it's nice to be able to, you know, learn from other times you've been out there. So I mean, it's not really a bad OCD thing. I think it's beneficial for both of us, but other than that, I don't know, I'm not that well, maybe I am, but I don't think I'm that OCD.
You're
going to find out here.
There's one thing. He's very particular about the umbrella.
I
don't fold the umbrella up very well, so he has to put it exactly how he likes it.
Terrible umbrella folder, Peppers.
Yeah.
My first experience, first pro-am at the Canadian Open last year, so we get to the tee or the practice green, and I'm like, hey, it's gonna rain here shortly, Martin. He's like, oh, is it? I was like, yeah, you got a rain cover? He's like, nope, no rain cover. I was like, you got an umbrella? He's like, yeah, it's in my locker. So he goes, gets his umbrella. We're walking down the tee. I have a towel over the clubs, just trying to make them not, you know, not get wet at all. And we're both huddled under this one umbrella walking down the fairway. And he's just like, yeah, this is the tour for guys like me. And I was like, all right, fair enough. So anytime I think of the umbrella, that's what I picture. For me, being OCD, the only thing I'm really OCD about is people just standing directly behind me. I like have this issue with peripheral vision anytime. Like lights bug me in my peripherals. That's literally it. And my buddies chirp me and do it on purpose. So screw those guys.
For me, it's just a little thing I do in my putting routine. I always sort of have this little putting stroke thing where I kind of put my hands down almost like a prayer, which is probably what I need for my putting anyways, where I just kind of rock my hands back and forth. And I always do it in my routine just before I stroke the putter, and I don't even think about it anymore, and people point it out to me all the time. And it's just something I did from a drill that Nick Price, you know, showed 25 years ago, and I just do it and I don't even think about doing it. Even when I say, you know what, I'm not going to do it anymore, I end up doing it anyway. So it's just something I do and I don't even think about. So, all right. A couple more here. Here's an interesting one. Who gets the Grand Slam first, Jordan or Rory? What do you think, boys?
Rory.
Pretty high on Rory as well. He's close. I think he'll get it done.
Kyle, I think you said Rory as well, correct?
Yeah, Rory as well. Spieth's going through some troubles right now, so I like Rory.
Yeah, I was thinking Rory. I mean, I think we're all going to pick Rory now that I'm saying. So. The reason why I'm saying Rory, I just find the PGA so random that, like, you know, those one-off guys come out there and pick up a win here and there, where Augusta, it's usually, you know, some of the top players year in, year out are in there. I mean, you obviously get your Danny Willett's every now and then, and it's not a slight on Danny Willett by any stretch, but wasn't expected to win that year. Where the PGA, you know, there's way more random winners of the PGA, which I find makes it a little bit more difficult to pick up that win, but maybe I'm just delusional.
Yeah, I'm with you guys, Rory, all the way. I just think from a consistency standpoint, he's there, and he's just got too many skills that are really applicable on major championship layouts. So I guess that makes four of us. All right, last
one. I got a quick thing to hop in here about your random Danny Willett winner. I think I've made one golf bet ever in my life, and it was Danny Willett to win the Masters when he won.
And you were allowed to make it. You weren't on the PGA Tour at that time, right?
Yeah. It was before I was a pro, right when I was starting pro golf, I think. He won in 2016.
What made you bet? Right. Like, was this prior to the tournament starting?
Yeah. I did pick two guys. I think it was like DJ and Danny Willett were my horses.
I need to know more. Like, did you play with Danny in the past? Like,
I had known him a little bit, yeah. And he'd been playing. He had been playing nice. I mean, he was a top player in the world. And I just liked, from what I knew of him, his, you know, he's excellent putter and his ball striking was pretty good. I wasn't sure if he hit it well enough or high enough, maybe, but you know, the conditions are right. And it was a little bit tougher and I think he grinded out and his putting.
All right. Last question about that though. How much did you win?
I don't remember. I think it was a $20 bet and I won like $1,000, something like that.
Wow. That's all right.
Not bad. Yeah.
Not bad.
I think it was nine. Yeah. 20 bucks. I bet and won nine something. Whatever that is.
Get good money when you're a young pro. You need it. All right, last one here, and I think we'll leave this for Corey to answer because he's probably the only one who has a chance.
No, I'm answering this question. You never know.
This. Well, then you can answer it too. What would be your Masters dinner menu, Corey?
We were talking about this the other day on the Masters, the Champions dinner night. I've been cooking a lot of food lately, but I'd probably a big steak guy, so a nice steak, lobster tail. Try and throw some sort of Canadian flair into it.
Like a Caesar to as your drink.
That would be, hey, that's pretty nice. Don't mind that. Like dessert, big apple pie fan. Apple pie with cheese. I don't know if every person I've ever met thinks the cheese with the pie is the weirdest thing ever, but I'm sold on it.
Kyle, you got to make a pick. Let's say there's a caddy dinner. Do the caddies get to go to the champions dinner? No? Wow, that's got to sting.
They did a thing at the tournament in Maui this year, the tournament of champions. There's a caddy dinner, and the defending champion gets to pick the meal out. So Xander Schauffele's caddy, Austin, picked out a meal. But if I was going to pick something, I'm not a big food guy. I would probably just go with like grilled chicken and broccoli or something. I'm like not particular at all with food.
Oh man, those poor caddies. Yeah. For me, I'm going like a chicken parm, a lot of red wine, cheesecake. You don't need an appetizer with that on the menu.
No, that's about all of it there. So I'll probably throw in a prime rib for me, maybe a chocolate souffle for dessert. I like Tiger going with the milkshakes. That's a pretty good one. Might have to mix some of that in there too.
I love it. Well, thanks, boys. That's the mailbag. We don't want to take any more of your time. Not that you have anywhere to be or anything to really do right now. but we really do appreciate it. You guys are welcome back anytime. Two of our favorites. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us. A lot of fun.
Yep, we'll see you guys later.
Thanks again to Corey and Kyle for joining us for that interview. Awesome. Always awesome to have both of those guys on. You know, you can tell they're a little bit bored, you know, at this point, just like the rest of us. But it was a great time. Good interview. And they obviously answered our mailbag for this week. So if you fast forwarded that interview for some reason, hoping to go straight to the mailbag, go back because they answered all the questions this week.
It was awesome. I mean, it's been nice for them to come on the podcast separately, but to have them both on together and have their interaction together, I think it just adds a whole different other element to see the caddy and the player on the podcast together.
It was cool. One of the things that we talked about on there was the Masters and watching Tiger Woods win the 2019 Masters and the replay that they had on the weekend. You and I both caught parts of it. I don't know. I didn't fully sit down and watch all of it from start to finish. I know you watched most of it, but it was cool. And I really caught at least the last kind of four or five holes where everything really broke down, because the start was more of a grind for Tiger than I actually remembered. I did remember 12 being super impactful, not for his sake, more for Molinari's sake. But you know, rewatching it, what stood out to you?
Well, the funny part is, I mean, we've been watching a lot of these Masters replays, and like you said, it's hard to kind of sit down there and watch the whole thing because, you know, some of the other ones we've been watching have been just the back nine, so they've been a couple hours, but, you know, this broadcast is 5.5 hours, and I think there's a lot of people that are probably going to dial it up on YouTube now because it is up on the Masters YouTube channel. Finally. So you can watch all 5.5 hours up there if you want. But I think, you know, the things that really stood out for me, you know, Molinari looked in somewhat control early on. He had been that way all week. He'd been playing so well. And really, you know, he was looking good right into the early part of that back nine.
He looked unbeatable. He did look
really dead. Yeah, so I think that was the big thing. And obviously Tiger got in trouble there on nine, got behind a bush, and you're thinking, is this his kind of undoing? Maybe it's not going to happen. And really at that point, I mean, you know, it's 2019. We're not expecting, you know, Tiger to necessarily win this thing. So, you know, once he got into a little bit of trouble in the first couple shots on that back nine, tee shot on 11 as well, which he ended up in the woods, but, you know, ended up getting a little bit of a clearing, made, you know, four out of that. But, you know, by the time they got through 11, you're thinking, Molinari, all he's got to do is sort of, you know, get through these next few holes. And chances are he's about to win his second major.
Yeah, that was that stretch of golf that he was just fairways and greens, fairways and greens, fairways and greens. Like, he was,
and his putter was so good that
so
week.
Good. And I actually believe, rewatching it, I don't think 12 had that big of an impact. I think the biggest impact, because he was still in it until 15, and the biggest impact was that layup on 15 was just awful. Yeah. And he obviously hit the tree on his approach shot, dropped that in the water. Then Tiger, at that point, you don't give Tiger an opening. Yeah, you don't open the door even slightly because he's jumping through it like the Kool-Aid man and then shutting the door behind you, right? You just can't pull that off. And yeah. Tiger did exactly that. He goes on, he makes his birdie. That shot, he said that shot into 15, that second shot into 15 was the best shot he hit all week. And we all know what he did on 16. He almost aced it. Which, quick side note, in that broadcast, two things about this. So he goes on, I don't remember him popping up throughout the broadcast, maybe because I was kind of coming in and out watching it, but he pops up out of nowhere on 16. He talks about that. He said, that was the best shot I hit that week was on 15. And then on 16, he almost aces it. And he goes on to say he had 19 hole-in-ones up until the year 2000, and then only one since, and it was like last year with playing with his son and somebody else.
Yeah, so which is odd. I mean, you think about this guy being so dialed in with his irons that you'd assume that, you know, he would have a ton of hole-in-ones, especially considering, you know, 2000, you know, he was at the height of his powers. You'd think beyond that, that, you know, he would have made a bunch. But yeah, I guess it goes to show you how random the whole thing is. But I'm with you. After 12, I think, you know, Molinari makes the double there. I think at that point, I think what made it really exciting for everyone is that there was a bunch of players that were in the mix. And we didn't know who could possibly win it there. And Tiger was just one possibility. But as soon as, you know, Tiger makes his birdie on 13 and then makes that birdie on 15, you're going, okay, odds are better here. Is this really happening? He's sort of in the mix, but you're also looking and going, all right, Cantley's in there, Kepka's in there, Schauffele's in there, DJ's making a run. So you got a bunch of players. And then as soon as he makes that birdie on 16, whereas a lot of other guys just didn't do anything in the last few holes. A lot of the other players got to, you know, they got to 12 under, but they did nothing. They parred in the last few holes, and Tiger was the guy making the birdie on 16. And, you know, guys like JT and DeChambeau, who made hole in ones, they just weren't in the mix and they weren't close enough. So, you know, that's where the Tiger really separated himself, was that 16 when he hits it 8-iron about 18 inches.
I agree. One other thing, I mentioned two things about that interview. Did he Sharpie on his beard? Because it's not. It's, go yeah. Look at this. It's so weird.
It's crazy.
And he's looking. Also he's getting gray. He's also balding.
It's definitely colored. It's definitely colored.
The beard must be colored, but it was so weird. It looked like freshly colored that morning. Like he forgot. And he just ferment it. And like, you know, when you have you ever used just ferment it? It basically a lot of it's on your skin rather than on your actual face. Or sorry, on the actual hair. And it was just weird. The other thing about this all is Dustin Johnson at the time was number one in the world. You never saw him throughout the entire match until 18. You see his approach and you know, the putt, which Dustin finished one back. Can you imagine this entire thing where Dustin somehow makes that putt? And it just shows the Tiger effect where, you know, he's in the tournament, he's in the lead, he's right up there. They're just going to show him, where you don't even see the number one player in the world playing out there. If he makes that putt on 18, we're going into a playoff potentially between Tiger and DJ, which could have been crazy. I mean, Kepka, same thing. He had a birdie putt on 18. I saw a great tweet where it was basically like, this shows how little that Brooks watches golf, because he was shocked that putt goes left when it's gone left forever, which I never actually picked up on. Great tweet to whoever it was. Might've been no laying up, which was hilarious, but it was tight right to the end. I remember though, watching it live, because he had that DJ length putt to basically seal it. It was like a for bogey or whatever. Mm-hmm. And DJ, when he had that putt for the US Open, decided to three putt it instead. So I remember being super nervous at the time. Looking back, obviously, maybe I didn't need to be that nervous because it really was almost a tap in looking at it on TV, but it felt like it was 10 feet in the moment.
Yeah, and really, I mean, you mentioned Kepka there, Schauffele, Cantley. All three of those guys were 12 under par through 15. I mean, they were there. And I mean, it ended up being Tiger really had, you know, he had a little bit of extra leeway and he knew he could kind of make a bogey sort of and get away with it. But I mean, the fact is, you know what, I think the excitement just ramped up and ramped up. you know, hits that great shot on 16. And I think that was when, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, I was sitting there watching with a group of people and they were all kind of looking at each other going, man, this is actually happening. And, you know, you couldn't imagine at that point that, you know, the script was there. So you're thinking, oh, there's nothing can happen that's, you know, going to go sideways here. He's going to get, you know, his 15th major. And, you know, we end up with obviously the emotion at the end. I mean, the fans were going crazy more than you would expect at Augusta National, where they're, you know, they're a little bit more reserved and, you know, they want to hang on to their tickets and stuff. But I mean, that chanting Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. I mean, he was going nuts too. And he said in the rewind that he didn't even remember yelling and what he was doing there as he's walking. And it was just pure emotion. And I think this just made for a cool replay. And, you know, if there was a year where the Masters is going to get postponed to November and we were going to have to watch last year's one, this is a pretty good one to have to rewatch.
I agree 100%. Last thing before we wrap this up, I mentioned in the interview with Corey and Kyle about who will get the Grand Slam earliest, right? And I said I had this take, which is basically like the best players always play at the Masters, where, you know, in the PGA Championship we get some randoms kind of show up and steal one or two. If you look at this leaderboard from last year, I sound like a genius. I hadn't even looked up this leaderboard. Like we go
Day was at 11. He was right there too.
Exactly. You got Tiger Woods, DJ, Koepka, Schauffele, Jason Day, Tony Finau, Molinari, Webb Simpson, Patrick Cantlay, Ricky Fowler, John Rahm, right? Like that's your top 10 right there. Those are the players that were playing the best basically all year.
Yeah, and Finau was in that final group. Like a lot of people don't remember. It was threesomes and that, you know, Molinari and Tiger, but yeah, Finau was in that group as well.
Yeah, Finau started the day at minus 11, so did Tiger. Tiger obviously finished minus 13. Molinari started at minus 13 and obviously went the other way to minus 11, and the rest is history. Tiger picks up his 15th major and everyone's happy, and the talk about will he catch Jack again can start over again, because it was kind of quiet for the last decade. Why don't we move on to our next part, where we discuss this off the top, the idea of the five players we think are going to benefit the most from self-isolation, quarantine, however you want to discuss it. And I think Tiger is a good transition to that, because it's safe to say we both had Tiger on our list.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. I mean, he said in that rewind broadcast that he was good to go for this Masters, but, you know, any player that has health issues needs a little bit more rest, needs time for their body to heal. You know, Tiger is obviously one of those guys. He can benefit from this. The cool part is as well for a guy like Tiger, and, you know, Corey mentioned it, you know, some golf courses are obviously still open and people can access those facilities in Florida, but Tiger's got his own. You know, he's got his own indoor place. He's got his own outdoor place as far as a practice facility on top of his golf course and things. But the fact that he has, you know, short game area, all those things at his home certainly gives him a little bit of an advantage. And, you know, I know, as you say, Tiger, he's kind of number one of the player that we think will benefit from this self-isolation time.
Yeah, he was number one on my list. Number two is very similar in the sense of injury and going to a Canadian side of things with Graham Dillette. Graham's been dealing with his back issues for, you know, the better part of 3 years now, it's safe to say, and major, major struggles. He did come back. Was it too early? Who knows? Graham's been kind of quiet, which is, you know, fair. I would be doing the exact same thing if I was dealing with what he was dealing with. You know, he's one of the best ball strikers in the world when he's playing. So hopefully this is helping, and hopefully when the season starts back up, we do see Graham back out on the tour.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, my second guy was pretty much on that same vein. Brooks Koepka obviously was dealing with knee issues early on in the year over the winter time. This can only help him as far as to physically get back in the shape. And, you know, I think that's great for golf. That's great for all the fans as well. I mean, the players want to compete against the best players and the fans want to see the best players all out there. So it's just like hockey. You know, you get guys that, you know, play out throughout the season. They've got, you know, nicks and wear and little injuries that are nagging injuries that hurt them. And, you know, if they had some time to rest up and to get back and play and everybody can get healthy again, then, you know, it makes it that much more exciting, a product that's going to end up happening. So I'm hopeful that that's going to happen for golf.
Yeah, I agree. I actually had Brooks on my list last week that players I'm most worried about because I thought he was going
the other way
too jacked. He right after it's like I think Brooks listens. I think he's an avid listener of our podcast because right after he posted he was doing ab workouts. He's trying to get a six pack. So you're welcome for the motivation there, Brooks. Third on my list, I'm going with Rory. Rory. My thought here is a little bit different. Rory's one kind of like Brooks where it's this like golf really doesn't matter that much to me. I like it. We did talk a lot last year, how he seemed more focused than ever. And maybe this just gets him to get that itch back, for golf again, and getting that break that you just don't get ever as a professional golfer, especially of Rory's stature where, you know, you're asked for interviews 24/7, you're asked to do podcasts, you're asked to do this, that.
Yep.
Where maybe Rory just, you know, he sits out for a while. He loves the game more. He gets back to practicing more, which I don't think practice has ever been his issue by any stretch of imagination. But I think this will benefit Rory a lot.
Yeah, that obligation theme sort of carries into my third player, which is more on the LPGA side, which is Canadian Brooke Henderson, who, you know, plays probably more than a lot of the other players in the LPGA Tour. This is going to give her, who's really, you know, still at a young part of her career. She's just really getting into her career, even though she's got 9 LPGA wins already. But this is an unprecedented break for her from golf. Obviously, she can do some practicing at home and things like that. But, you know, she has played nonstop for so many years that here's an opportunity to get away from it, get away from the media obligations, the sponsor obligations, a lot of the other things that take up your time, maybe spend a little bit more time with her family, do some things, but overall just less. So I think because she's a person who loves to play, and you know, she would do the same thing when she came back to Canada here. If she came back in the fall, she'd be out playing in pretty much snow. It wouldn't matter to her. I mean, she loves to play and she's always said that. So I think for her, she's just going to be raring to go, and she's just going to have an energy that maybe, you know, maybe she didn't realize had been missing a little bit.
For sure. Bring back the kid in her. She's still, what, 21? Like, she's a young girl.
Yeah, 22.
Exactly. Yeah. My next pick was on your list last week, and I'm going to bring him onto my list this week, is Sungjae Im. I actually think this is going to benefit Sungjae, where Sungjae can recharge the batteries of the machine he is, or the robot he is, and just relax, because he hasn't sat in one place for more than a week. And when did he get his PGA Tour card? That date till whenever they locked down the PGA Tour. So I actually think Sungjae will be able to settle down. Maybe he'll relax. Maybe he'll work on his putting.
Maybe buy a house.
Maybe buy a house. Who knows? You know, Corey kind of speculated where he is at this point earlier. Yeah. He, you know, who knows where Sungjae is, but I think this actually benefits Sungjae rather than hurts him.
Yeah. My guy that I'm going to go with for fourth is actually Phil Mickelson, who, you know, played, I think, 9 events, I think, so far into the schedule. And it's surprising to think. I mean, it was an early sort of end to the season, but we're still, you know, 20-some-odd events really into the season. But he is 89th in the FedEx rankings after that first part of the season. So, again, he's a guy, he fights with rheumatoid arthritis, but he's, you know, he works out and he's doing a lot of different things. I think this gives him the time to reevaluate sort of the first part of the year, the first start of the year. You know, he's a smart guy. He'll figure out kind of what he needs to work on. The neat part for him is that he's got so many innate skills that he's worked on over the years. I don't think he's a guy that would lose touch and feel a lot, where some other players would have to work on that a lot. So as soon as they get back at it, then, you know, he's got that to work with. And, you know, chances are he's going to be able to get a chance to, you know, play some 3 majors in a short period of time if the schedule holds the way they're projecting it out. And maybe this gives him the time to rest up, to think about a little bit more about wing foot in a good way. But who knows? We'll see how that works.
I was actually thinking more like the Masters.
The other way?
Well, the Masters in the sense of, like, you know, maybe he does something well. Like, he's always in the mix at the Masters. Kind of has that, you know, that Freddie vibe at the Masters. Maybe he figure something out in November, and then April's not that far away, and he remembers it, and who knows. As I kind of predicted, I feel like Phil gets one more Masters in his 50s for some reason. I don't know why. I think it'd be a great story, but we'll find out. My last one, I'm going to be very brief on this. I'm not going too far. My last one is Tommy Two Gloves Gainey. You can't get in trouble on the road if you're not on the road. That's
good point. Really good. spend some time home with the family, maybe repair some relationships, some things a little bit, and away you go. Yeah. There you go. Exactly. All right. My last guy, DJ, you know what? He's not a guy that practices probably a lot anyways. Doesn't really think too hard about it. So for him, you know, he probably just won't miss a beat. He just goes back and plays and, you know, checks his wedge distances with his track band to get going and just goes out there and slugs that 340-yard fade off the tee. And, you know, he's sort of like, you know, here's a reference that you won't probably even get, but he becomes like the Bruce Litsky of 2020. It's a guy that doesn't even – he probably doesn't even know where his golf clubs are. And he'll just pick them up, go out, shoot a million under, win a tournament, and hey, he's just DJ and he does his thing. He's just that kind of guy.
Nobody under like 40 got your reference.
Yeah,
and we just lost all of our listeners. That was our list of top five players that we're least worried about. They're going to benefit from this break. And it sounds like Corey and Kyle are both taking some time and benefiting from it as well. Why don't we wrap it up? Why don't we hit a quick tip of the week? Then we'll wrap it up and head to the spring, that is spring in Canada without golf for a week, but we'll be back. But tip of the week.
Yeah, a lot of people are, you know, we've had a lot of tips here talking about, you know, chipping, putting, things like that. But, you know, even if you can't make full swings in your yard, and we're certainly finding that, you know, hitting nets are getting sold out everywhere. So, I mean, if you want to be in a hot business, if you were in the hitting net business, man, you're doing okay right now. But anyways, one thing that you can practice without having a hitting net is you can actually practice impact. And a lot of people don't necessarily know what impact looks like or a good impact looks like. They always think it's sort of like a return to address, which is not really the case because you are in motion. So one thing that you can do here is practice what the feeling of impact is. And if you take a slow motion video of any of the players out there and get them just an impact, some key things that you'll see there are the fact that, you know, they're rotated towards the target with their chest and their pelvis. They see that happening that way. You'll see their hands moving a little bit more forward. They'll have a little bit more shaft lean. They'll have pressure moved into their forward foot, their left foot, if they're a right-handed player, the one that's more towards the target. That's more what you want to get to for an address position. So you can go and just replicate the feel and the look at that and just make some practice swings and start getting used to where that is. And that will benefit you without even just hitting balls. And by the time you're ready to get back out there and hit some shots, you're going to know exactly what impact feels like.
So one thing I'll get your thoughts on, I'm known to have a stronger grip, you could say. That's fair to say.
that's definitely fair.
That's fair. Is that like a nice way of putting it?
Yeah. No, it's fine. I mean, as long as you match up everything else that's going in your golf swing, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah. So, but I you know, it's strong. Let's say it's strong, which, you know, I read this article, maybe it's real, maybe it's not, that too strong of a grip, you know, you're actually hurting yourself on club head speed. I don't know if you believe that or not. You're shaking your head.
Not necessarily.
I digress. No. My grip is too strong. It's safe to say it's a little bit too strong. So what I've been trying to do is I pulled out, I have Ben Hogan's, you know, Five Essentials of the Golf
Swing. Five Lessons, yeah.
Five Lessons, sorry. And obviously the key is the grip. So one of the things in there is just this idea of just holding the bottom club with just your two middle fingers. So I've been chipping where my other... with my left hand on, and there's just the two middle fingers on my right hand. I am right-handed, and just hitting chips that way and mm-hmm. getting that feel. So my grip, clearly you can't do too strong of a grip that way, or else you're holding it still in the middle of your hand to make it that way. So it's just that way. And that's been my way of trying to loosen that grip. So it's less drastic than hitting full shots with a looser grip. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I like that. I mean, one of the things I always say to people is that, you know, get a golf club in your hand. I mean, doesn't matter what, especially if you're not able to play for a while, just have a club lying around the house where you can just get it in your hand. I mean, it's like anything else. I mean, if you get used to having it in your hands, you're generally going to have less grip pressure. You're not going to try to over control it. It'd be no different. I mean, if I hand you a toothbrush and you've never had a toothbrush in your hand for the first time, you're going to give a death grip to it because you don't know what's happening with it. How do I have have to control this. But after a while, you know it's just a softer feel that's in there. You know, different throwing a ball, swinging a baseball bat, anything. You start to have that natural feel for how it moves, what it feels like in your hands. So same thing for that. I mean, just getting in there in a couple fingers, realizing that you don't have to over control it, apply too much grip pressure, you'll realize it's just a lot easier and smoother to let the club sort of move more naturally rather than trying to force that. So I'm good with that. Definitely.
Well, hopefully my hitting mat, my turf shows up so I can start chipping outside. Cause as I said, there's some dents in the basement. It's not looking good. I'm going to be in trouble.
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, we were talking a little bit to the guys about, you know, trick shots and seeing stuff out there. I am seeing just disasters all over the place with some of these people, broken windows and doors and all sorts of different things. You know, we talked about, you know, people using ping pong balls and solo cups. Yeah, ping pong balls, good idea, especially inside. I'm seeing people swinging and hitting real golf balls in their houses, like inside, thinking they can just chip them and do all sorts of different things. I'm telling you right now, golf balls are hard. They're really, really hard.
I don't have any ping pong balls. That's where the dents came from. They're golf balls. I got nothing else going on.
Well, the good thing that's going to come out of this, we're going to see a lot of blooper videos for a long, long time of disasters of all sorts of things happening. People also making makeshift nets. They're trying to, you know, they're putting up, you know, blankets and towels and stuff. They're doing all sorts of things, which is okay, but they don't understand how hard a golf ball is, how fast it flies. So I'm seeing like clotheslines getting ripped down and again, dents in garage doors, and the people are missing this, and they're hitting a ball like five houses over. You need a proper net probably in most cases, and just temper it a little bit of what you're doing out there.
Yeah, you need both sides.
Definitely. Yeah. And don't be afraid to have sort of some side netting for some shanks and stuff.
I mean,
like
the
that.
El Hazels can be picked up pretty quick right now when you haven't grabbed that golf club in a while. So I'm sure our guests coming up over the next couple of weeks have nets, and we'll chat more about nets going forward in our home setups. But I think it's a good time to wrap it up. Thank you for that tip. I'm going to get working on that. Going to get working on my grip a little bit more. Thank you again to Corey and Kyle for coming on, some of our favorites of all time. It shouldn't surprise anybody of why. And, thanks for everyone out there doing what they're doing. That's the most important part. Thank you to the essential workers. Thank you to the nurses. My neighbor's a nurse. Thank you to her for doing what she does. It's what we do is not important. We're just here talking golf and we're waiting for golf and we're hoping that it becomes essential, but it's not essential. We both know that it's not essential. What these people are doing is essential. They're keeping everyone safe and we appreciate that from all of our families to yours. Thank you. I don't think there's anything else I can say on that matter. Scotty, do you have any final words?
No, that's really what it comes down to. You know what? We'll keep trying to entertain you, keep trying to occupy you while you've got a little extra time. And, please subscribe if you can. Leave us a review. We always appreciate that. And, you know, it helps the show grow. And we've got a great lineup of more guests to come in the next little while. Response has been fantastic. And,
Tiger Woods?
I don't know if we get Tiger yet, but we'll work on it. How's that? But looking forward to bringing everybody more content, and everybody stay safe and healthy out there.
All right, Scotty. Well, I think that's it. Thank you for listening, everybody. We will see you next week. Like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.